Hi, and welcome to Pathways, the podcast by Grenadian STEAM. This is the show where we chat with Grenadians and other West Indians pursuing careers in the STEAM fields to learn about the reasons they got into the industry, the struggles they have faced, and some tips and tricks they may have picked up along the way. I'm your host and president of GrenSTEAM, Arlene Hayes. In this season, we are putting the focus on those who are doing it best right at home. Science, technology, engineering, architecture, and math exist all around us, even though we may not always realize it. And there are lots of openings for these skill sets to be used on the island. So join us as we talk about STEAM in Grenada and hear about some local businesses that you might want to get involved with and support. Kaim Joseph, also known as Sonix, graduated from the University of Texas at Arlington, summa cum laude, with a bachelor's degree in mathematics and a minor in business administration. After studying in the U.S., Kaim returned to Grenada and served as a teacher at the Beacon High School in the areas of mathematics, chemistry, and principles of business. He then served as market and operational risk analyst at the Grenada Cooperative Bank. It was during that time that he officially launched Sonix Productions, a creative media production hub specializing in creative direction, video production, audio production, and photography. After his stint at the Grenada Cooperative Bank, Kaim took up the role as the coordinator of mathematics support services at the St. George's University and served in that capacity until he resigned in October of 2018. Since then, he has worked full-time as manager and executive producer at Sonix Productions. We hope you enjoy today's chat, and if you do, be sure to head over to Apple Podcasts to leave a review or drop us a note on social media and let us know what you want to hear more of. Kaim, welcome to Pathways.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
Of course. So to get us started off, just give us some background on you. Where are you from? Where do you grow up in Grenada?
Well, I am from like the Caliste area. So Technically here is it's called True Blue, but it's like on the outskirts of True Blue, right next to the highway.
Yeah.
So I kind of prefer to call it the Caliste area. Okay. That's where I'm from. So south side of the island.
All right. And growing up, if you could remember, describe for us a little bit what you were like as a student. So primary school through secondary school.
In primary school, I would definitely say I was a wild one.
Yeah.
So I had a lot of excess energy just waiting to be used up on something. So I was always running. I was involved in things like track and field. On top of that, I just run around school and falling and getting myself cut every day. So those were the things I was doing in school. Academically, I was always driven towards creative things. So I always enjoyed creative writing and those sorts of things in primary school. So writing stories and all of these things, I really enjoyed those. Mathematics was never in that list, not when I was in secondary, not when I was in primary school. So I actually was just surviving mathematics. But I was never a fan. Like I was never a fan in primary school.
Really?
But that was it. Like I was pretty decent at school. I wasn't badly off. So you know, I was good.
Okay.
Secondary school now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I forgot the second part of your question. No, yeah, I don't want to leave out that part. Secondary school was interesting because I spent 4 years and a day, 4 years and one day in Grenada Boys Secondary School because the one day, it was right after Hurricane Ivan in 2004. And Ivan literally, I spent 2 days then, like a day and a half. So it was 4 years and a day and a half. Because Ivan, I think, hit on, I believe it was a Wednesday or a Tuesday. But after that, I went to St. Mary's College in St. Lucia. After spending a while here in Grenada, my parents, they had some friends in St. Lucia, so they decided to send me over there. Mm. So I finished Form 5 in St. Lucia, yeah?
Okay.
So again, coming up as a student in GBSS, what can I say? My school days were epic, like really fun. You know, I was doing everything, things that were good, things that were not so good, but all how it was fun, you know?
Yeah.
So in school, like, I was pretty much driven to two things, actually. Like, I really enjoyed business in school as well as science. So I was sort of the weird combination of student that was involved in, like, principles of accounts, but yet still I was doing chemistry, biology, everything but physics. Like, I hated physics with a passion. I don't know why. I just disliked physics.
Intense.
But I know, but chemistry, biology, and those things, like, that was me in secondary school. And then once I left secondary school, I went on to A-level in St. Lucia, so Arthur Lewis Community College, right? So there, I completely did away with the business stuff, and I was just strictly into science at that point. So I was doing chemistry, biology, mathematics, and communication. So the thing that I was doing that was business oriented was the fact that I was, you know, involved in a group that was throwing parties, like promotion business. I mean, serious promotion business in St. Lucia, you know.
Yeah.
So that was where that was where the business kind of showed its face. But in terms of academics, I was pretty much straight science in South Louis Community College. That's the history in a nutshell.
So it sounded like after primary school, the creative side kind of went away. I didn't hear you talk about any art or anything like that.
Well, I think that's more a function of me kind of forgetting myself, because, I mean, I was always involved in artistic things. You know, like in secondary school, like I grew up like taking classical piano lessons, and then that kind of went into me doing music. I played pan for numerous years. So for me, on the creative side, it was coming through music. Like, that was, it was mainly expressing itself at the time through music.
Okay.
Coming through secondary school, like, you know, so I wasn't into art or anything like that. I can't draw anything to save my life. I can't even trace something to save my life. Like, if I had to bet my life and you give me something and you tell me to trace it, I would mess it up. That's how bad I am. But music, I was pretty comfortable in the musical space. So
yeah,
I expressed my creativity through music a lot. And, you know, that kind of kept it, that kind of held from then all the way to now. You know, I still enjoy doing music.
Okay. So, interesting thing for me. I heard that you have a background in math.
I do.
So, tell us how that happened after, you know, you had no liking for math as a student.
Well, I think this is one of the cases where, like, your teacher and the teachers that you were exposed to really does make a difference in how you perceive a certain subject. So, for me, coming up in secondary school, like in GBSS, like in Form 1, I had a pretty awesome math teacher, Miss Lord. She was fantastic. After Miss Lord, it kind of went down a bit in terms of, you know, my perception of what was going on in this class and how relevant it was to life and how excited I was about the content.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just wasn't. So I was surviving. I would say I was surviving mathematics, almost like mathematics was lording over me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Then I went to St. Lucia and I met this math teacher called Mr. Auguste. And for some reason, he just changed my entire perspective on what math was.
Mm-hmm.
What it was like. He was fun. He was light. And then they got me into these extra lessons. And then I met this other teacher, Miss something with an I. I forgot what her name was. But I used to see her on Saturdays. And she was a really nice lady. So, you know, she kind of changed my perception of mathematics. She kind of made it more practical, more useful. She made it more of a language that I could speak and communicate with, as opposed to this language that's so hard to decipher. Like, she made it simple enough that I could trace it logically. So I started becoming really good at math in Form 5, actually. Like, coming up, I was just good. I think I had the mental ability to just pass, you know, and do okay.
Yeah.
And then when I got into Form 5, it's like something just clicked. So, like, it just clicked all of a sudden, and I was like, hey, I could do this. And then when the CXC grades came out, And they were like, okay. But I did 8 subjects for 6. In St. Lucia, I think we were constrained to just doing 8 in school. And if you had to do more than that, you have to go outside of the school.
Okay.
So I did 8 subjects. And when I got back the results, I was like, whoa. Actually, I got 8 ones. And I was like, whoa, hold on. I said, I got a 1 in math. I was like, whoa. So that for me was like, you know, that was exciting. And I was like, boy, from where I came from to get myself in 1 year, to be able to produce a 1 in something that I thought I would never get a 1 in, that was pretty awesome. So my perception started to change. And then I took that into college and A-level. And then for some reason, the pure mathematics and statistics, the higher level math at the A-level, the thing just like clicked. And I think once the logic and so came in and I started figuring out how to speak the mathematical language, it became a bit easy. And so I did math at A level again. I got an A again. I don't know. I'm just a bit weird when it comes to these things, because somebody would watch me and that's not the first thing they would think, like, nah, he's not like that kind of nerd. But
yeah.
Secretly I am.
On the down low, I won't tell. Well, so all this time through secondary school, did you have any idea what you wanted to be, what you wanted to do after?
Coming into the end of Form 5, I had such a strong inclination to chemistry that I really, really, really was considering chemical engineering. Like, chemistry was my favorite out of all the sciences that I was exposed to.
Yeah.
Remember, I said from the beginning, I hated physics because I had a terrible physics teacher who made it so difficult for me to even want to think about physics.
Mm-hmm.
But I just always loved chemistry. So a lot of my focus in terms of studying and so went into chemistry. I loved it.
Yeah.
And then I was like, I want to become a chemical engineer. So I think coming out of Form 5 into A-level, I was definitely leaning towards chemical engineering. Then at some point, I started leaning towards medicine and I was like...
Yeah, what's funny about that is that everybody I know who has done chemical engineering is like, it's not chemistry at all. So like,
but you know, I think I would have preferred that side of an application of chemistry as opposed to like the pure theoretical side of chemistry. I think that's generally what I've discovered about myself, is that I tend to prefer things that are applied. You know, so again, these are not things that I was aware of. I just knew I liked chemistry and I loved chemistry, especially organic stuff. And I just knew that I liked it. And I didn't know where to go. And I think that that's a major problem that a lot of persons who sit where we sat, who are sitting where we sat now, you know, I mean, the world is opening now and information is available and whatnot, but it's still so difficult sometimes when you have limited examples of what can you do with this subject?
Mm-hmm.
Or I have a love for chemistry. What can I do besides become a doctor or become a chemical engineer? Like, there are probably a whole bunch of other things that we just don't know about. So that was my story of chemistry. And then I don't know, at some point some bird whispered in my ear something called actuarial science, which was, you know, like a branch of mathematics, statistics, which kind of focuses on probability and engaging probabilistic models in application to insurance and insurance pricing and models and those things.
Mm-hmm.
And I decided that I wanted to go down that path. So that's kind of how the mathematics in university started.
Okay.
So I enrolled in the University of Texas at Arlington, majoring in math, the actuarial science option to be specific. So the line of mathematics that we did after, we did all the pure math stuff and the mathematical proofs and the abstract algebra and all of those annoying things. Then we stepped into, like, you know, statistics and probability and things that had to do with stochastic processes, which was fun for me. But after a while, like, I was like, I don't know if I like this.
Yeah.
So I went through the entire process and, you know, I went to university. I did my degree in mathematics. This is kind of unfortunate because I'm about to see, I graduated. Honors, 4.0 GPA, but I was not in love with it. So, you know, it kind of led room for me to start exploring other things. I don't know. I stayed, I did it, and then now I'm doing something else completely.
When you finished the degree, you went back home immediately, or?
When I finished the degree, I was in Texas for a few months, probably, I would say, probably 7 months after. So I did some substitute teaching also in Texas. So that was what I was doing. So when I left to come here, I was offered a couple of teaching jobs in Texas with mathematics. Because, I mean, the truth is, with undergrad in mathematics, there are only so many things you can get into straight off of the bat, yeah? Mm-hmm. So in terms of what I wanted to do, which was becoming an actuary, you had to sit these series of exams before you could even be considered for certain jobs. Because certain jobs, you have to at least pass your P exam or your FM exam, and then you start getting into the fold. So, at that point, like, I decided not to continue it. So I didn't sit these exams, although I was preparing for them, but I just stopped. I literally just stopped and I was like, I'm going to try something else, you know? And I was like, hopefully I find what I like to do. And, you know, I kind of found it.
Okay. So walk us through it a little bit. What happened next for you? What was the next pursuit?
Well, immediately after university, when I came back,
yeah.
So the first job offer I got was in Superfund, which is an investment company here, and I think they specialize in investing in markets all around the world. Mm-hmm. By the time they wanted me to come to work at 2 a.m. and Arlene, I could not. No, I don't have a problem waking up early at all. I have zero problem. My problem was going to be how would I get to work at 2 a.m. Because at that time, fresh out of university, man Brooks, man no have no car, so I can't say, well, you know, I'm driving myself to work. That was not an option.
Yeah.
So I had to turn down that job, although I felt like it was something that I would really enjoy. I turned it down. And I ended up teaching for some years. And I really, really love teaching, like absolutely. I love teaching. So teaching is something that I never wanted to stop doing. And up to today, I still want to keep my hands in it, involved in some way, because I like it. You know what I mean? So I always feel like it's useful, and it's such a great area to give back to the country, to where it is, that to the place that, you know, kind of grew me up. I feel like I have such a strong connection to it.
Yeah.
That, you know, I never really want to completely get away from teaching. So even though I'm not teaching now, you know, I always have it in the back of my mind that, yeah, I want to teach again. So going back to the story. So after Superfund, I started to teach. I taught for a couple of years at Beacon High School, chemistry, mathematics, business, principles of business. And I say, here's the weird combination again. Here's the science man in the school also teaching business, because, you know, business just had to always just show up there.
Yeah.
So after that, I was offered a position at Co-op Bank in market and operational risk. So, you know, that was an interesting area for me because it was kind of new. But it was something that I was hearing a lot about, especially the market risk, which has a lot to do with, you know, analyzing risk associated with investments and so on. You know what I mean? So I kind of liked the idea of that. But again, once I got into it, the routine of it kind of killed me. And I was like, I don't like this routine. Like it felt a bit strict, a bit tight. And I was like, I feel like I need to be freer in terms of where my mind goes and what I can do and what I can create. Mm-hmm. And so from there, I decided to kind of get back in teaching in a form in education. So I applied for the mathematics demonstrator position at St. George's University, and I got through to that. So I was at SU for a while doing a math demonstrator job that basically coordinate math support services for the School of Arts and Science, as well as, you know, kind of just pop in if a lecturer is out and just cover their classes.
Yeah.
And do those types of things as well, depending on what was going on. So that was what I did for a while. While on the side, I was kind of building my business and trying to get that off the ground. So those two things were kind of happening simultaneously.
Okay. So now we're getting into the business part. So when did photography even start for you? Is it something you're always interested in, or?
I had almost zero interest in photography or video production. And, you know, my story and my involvement is a bit weird. It was actually in an English class in university. That's when I got my first exposure to like anything that had anything to do with video production, because we had this persuasive English class and we had to do a presentation at the end of the term, at the end of the semester. So it was either you do this pictorial representation of your argument, as in you have like some sheets and you draw it out. Remember from the beginning, I said to you, I cannot trace. I can't even trace something if you put it in front of me to trace. Can't do it. So I was like, it was either that or you do a video.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, I know for sure I cannot draw. So I was like, it seems like I have no other choice but to learn how to do video stuff. And that's what I did. So I did a video project. And I had to learn on the fly. Like, I knew nothing about editing, nothing about anything. And I just opened this Windows. It was iMovie. So I opened it on an iMac and I was like, okay, let's figure out this iMovie business. And that's kind of how it went. And I started doing that. And I did this video, and then everybody in the class was just laughing. And because I like humor, I'm very big on humor. So,
yeah.
The video was what you would call stupid, but sensibly stupid. So it was sensibly stupid, and people were just rolling and laughing. I was like, this is pretty amazing. It's kind of powerful. I could take my creativity, still give them a message, and still make it fun, but they still got the message at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And that kind of sparked something in me. And then after that, when I came back home to Grenada, I was involved in this band, and then we wanted to do a music video. And basically, we didn't have the money to do it because they were quoting us about $3,000. Again, remember I'm telling you, I'm fresh out of university, so man don't have no money.
Yeah.
And so I kind of decided to try my hand at doing it myself. So bought a camera, made up all my fake gimbal jigs and started shooting. Like, I've always been inquisitive like that. I'm like, if it's out there and I can learn it, I believe that I have the ability to learn anything.
Yeah.
So I was just like, I'm going to boldly just go into this, and wherever it takes me, it takes me. I had no idea that it would take me to this point. Like, absolutely none. This was nowhere in my mind. Like, if you asked me what I wanted to do after university, I would tell you I would either become an actuary or I'd probably get involved in some like investment banking or something of the sort. But never in my wildest dream would I ever imagine that I'd be involved in photography, right? So the label is a bit, what I do now is a bit broader than that.
Okay, so what do you call yourself? So
essentially, nowadays they call people like us like kind of content producers and strategists and the like. That's the fancy talk.
Okay. But
basically, a huge chunk of what I do is provide additional support services to marketing units within companies. So companies and organizations may have PR and marketing needs.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the people who sit in those companies oftentimes don't have the technical skill. And so to produce what it is that they have in their mind, or they might lack the creativity to think about, okay, how do I get this message across? They might just know, we want to launch this product that does this, and we want this product to get in the hands of everybody who's between the ages of 15 to 20.
Mm-hmm.
That might be as vague as the instruction comes. Where I come in is that I would have to figure out now, how do I get that messaging across in a creative way, in a cost-effective way, in a smart way, and build these campaigns and so for companies and clients and all alike. So that's part of it. And then we also do the run-of-the-mill things like shoot weddings and photo shoots and all of these things. So I've been exposed to all sorts of things. So I'm talking like shooting things like real estate projects and things like weddings, you're talking ads, you're talking maybe Caribbean heads of government meetings. Yeah. So it's like, it's been this roller coaster, but this very dynamic tree that all sprang out from that moment in that English class when I decided to do that video.
Yeah.
And so many things that have opened like my mind in terms of what I want to create and who I want to be. And that's kind of that kind of led me to where I am now. So it's kind of broad. So I definitely would not identify as a photographer, even though I do take photos and it's part of what I do, but it's only part because I do so much more than photography.
Right. Okay. Fair enough.
Yeah.
So when did that switch happen though, from like realizing that this is something that you could do, like, yeah, you can learn how to make videos, how to take pictures, all that, to saying I could actually make a business out of this?
Yeah, well, that happened. That kind of happened by default because I was doing my thing in SGU and normal and not intending to leave it just yet. And then I got a call from the bank because I just used to take the money that I had, was making on the side doing Sonic stuff, and just used to bank it. And I got a call from the bank, and the guy was like, "You need to come in to fill out a form." I was like, "Why?" So he said, "Well, you told us you were going to make X, Y." I remember in the beginning, when I opened the business account, I did have to do this projection thing where they said, "How much do you think you'll make?" And I think I just give them a regular figure, like $1,000 a month or something. I think that's what I said. So basically, what happened was that that particular year, I think I had a bunch of projects, and so I would have surpassed that quota that I gave them. And obviously for them as a bank, and nowadays when they have to comply with things, in terms of financial reporting and anti-money laundering initiatives and all of those things that happen around the world, that's happening around the world now. They had to kind of call me up and say, "Well, you need to kind of tell us what's going on because you exceeded what you told us you're going to do. So we want to make, you know what I mean? So we want to make sure you're not doing anything funky. You know what I mean?"
Where the
So
money coming from?
yeah, where the money coming from? So then when I went back and I analyzed, I was like, "Whoa, this is actually a viable business." And for me, I never set out thinking that it was that way. I was just doing it on the side, like it's like a side hustle, if you know what I mean. And then I was like, okay, if I could make this much money just casually doing it, I said, well, if I were to focus on it, I should be able to build something that's viable, something that's sustainable, something that's scalable, and actually produce a sustainable business. So that's kind of what happened. And it went from just being that to then being now Sonics, full time. And I've been full time now for 2 years, 2.5 years. So October will be 3 years, and the business is surviving, it's growing, it's doing well. So, I think that gamble was it was good. So it paid off so far. I'm happy about that.
All right. So just curious, where the name Sonics come from?
Sonics was initially, remind you that a lot of my creativity used to express itself through music. So coming through university times, like I was never into video and those things. I was always into music though. So I had this keyboard that I was traveling with. I traveled it from Grenada to Texas. That was my little baby. Like everywhere I was going, that keyboard was there. I loved it. And I still have it in the studio today. So I started doing music first, like music production, like making beats and like mixing vocals and those things. And I was taking like courses in Guitar Center in Texas. And so I got music production because that's what made me tick. So initially when I started it was mainly going to be about audio production, like music stuff. So hence why I mixed the word sonic, which is of course relating to sound, and the word mix, which is like a process in audio engineering in terms of getting your levels and your EQs. So I was like, I remember having this list of about 10 different things. And it was like the sound hub, the whatever, the sonic whatever, the sound mix. And then I just had this idea to like, I was like, why are you limiting yourself to mix words that are real? I was like, why can't I just take two words and just chop one and then add it to another one? And so I took the word sonic and the word mix, and I was like, son, instead of sonic, I could call it sonics, and then boom, sonic. There you go. Yeah, that's kind of how it came about.
Keep listening. We'll be right back after a short break. As part of our ongoing mission to engage the public in STEAM-related topics, GrenSTEAM is launching a crowdsourced blog. If you or someone you know has a piece they would like to share, which has something to do with science, technology, engineering, architecture, or math, be it a personal article, a short paper, a knowledge share, or simply suggested reading, go to cut.ly at STEAM blog, that's CUTT.ly /STEAMBLOG. Fill out our short form, then upload or paste your Word file to be uploaded to our website. If you'd like to get involved with the curation of our blog, reach out to admin@grensteam.org for more information. That's admin@grensteam.org. And we're right back to the conversation. All right. So tying it all together a little bit, was there anything that you kind of took from your undergrad? So your background in math and the business that was kind of always there that you think has helped you in developing?
Yeah, I mean, definitely going through the rigors of mathematics at university level definitely opens your mind a lot because of the thought processes that you have to go through, the discipline that's needed to even go through some of these things. The logic, I think, was the main thing. Like that reasoning part in mathematics, I think that was the best thing that I could take away from that undergrad. Mm. Like how you think about things and you don't take things for granted and you be very systematic in how you approach things and how you think about things so that you could often repeat a result if you only follow logical steps. So I believe that was like one of the great That was one of the greatest takeaways that I had from my university. Doing math, one, the discipline. So that holds today. Like, I'm a workhorse now. Like, that's just how it is. Like, my discipline was shaped by all of those things. Yeah. So now, like, you know, being how I am now and being disciplined to work now, even when there's nobody over me to tell me do it, because now, you know, when I used to have a boss, now I'm the boss. So now nobody is there to tell me what to do, and I still need to get all these things done. Discipline is definitely there. And the logic, I just think it helps, you know, in terms of increasing the way you process things and your contribution that you can make to things in terms of discourse. I think it was invaluable. So even though I don't use it explicitly now in what I do, I still have intentions now to use it in another way, because remember I said that I've always wanted to teach and do all of these things. So now I have something coming on stream that kind of meshes both my mathematical background as well as my newfound passion for creativity. So now these two things are now coming together on stream in a new project. Mm. And soon, I'll go ahead with it. Yeah?
Okay. So drop that soon, little nugget soon, right soon, there.
Soon. Yeah, soon.
Okay, well, soon. Can't wait to hear about it.
Yeah, man.
All right. So coming back to kind of your business and what you actually work on, the creative world, it seems to me like with Sonics and then with Genesis, that there's some interest in like working with developing technologies and, you know, using different methods and devices to get your product. What do you think is driving the way that you're taking that business right now?
That's an interesting question. The direction of the business is, and any business generally, is driven by what the market wants. Yeah? So you could do whatever you want, but if the market is not leading in that direction, then, you know, it doesn't make sense. So you've had all these exciting things happening now because with some of the technology that's available now, it's made doing things for us a bit more, it's made it easier to do certain things now.
Yeah.
So before, where you might have needed like huge sets and huge budgets to produce things, now you have things that are accessible to the average man like me or like anybody else who is doing a similar business. So that now we could produce things that might have needed several times more resources to do before. So I feel like where the business is headed, definitely like we're 100% in tune with what's going on in terms of advancement specifically related to what we do.
Yeah.
So you're talking cameras, drones, audio equipment, and all of these things. And it's pretty interesting because now you have applications of technology involved in some of these things that we use. So for example, there are drones that are involved in like heat mapping for like electricity distribution companies and whatnot. So now instead of going out to each pole and figuring out what's going on, a simple drone with some infrared sensors is now flying, and then they could tell them, all right, you have a problem at this station, you have a problem there, there seems to be a lot of heat loss here, you know what I mean? I've now seen these applications, and these are things that I've seen in real life. So like I know where definitely we're headed and where the technology is taking us. But it's also a case where the market is also demanding these things, because everybody's trying to get more efficient, everybody's trying to get better, and everybody's trying to save money at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. So that they could widen their profit margins. Yeah?
Yeah.
And technology is probably the best way to do that. And so we're finding that the technology that's available out there is also finding its way into what we do, so that you know we could apply it and be a useful solution to a company that needs it.
Okay. So what do you, there's kind of a glut, some people might say, of creative producers and marketing agencies, companies in Grenada right now. So two things. What do you think differentiates you and like your team from the others? And then what are some challenges that you've seen just in developing a business or specifically this type of business? Yeah.
I mean, for me, there's no barriers to entry in this industry. So that's also a factor that's immediately going to lead to a glut, right? Because there are no barriers. But of course, the market will sift out and the market will choose the ones that it thinks are viable in the long term. And so what I've tried to do is just to position myself to be a valuable asset to a company, right? So I'm talking again about critical thinking, creative thinking, being dedicated, being diligent, being a people's person. Like that's very important, like in terms of growing a business here, relationships matter. And so these are the things that I focus on. I just try to stay in my lane and actually be of value to my customers. So I don't go out seeking a whole bunch of customers.
Yeah.
I just look for the right ones and I try to provide them value. And most of them seem to think that I'm doing a decent job, so they rehire me and the contracts get extended. And so, you know, I mean, I'm able to build something sustainable from that. So that's kind of what I focus on. I just try to stay in my lane, do what I'm doing, mind my business, and just work hard and be true to what I do and be true to people and not shortchange anybody. So once they hire me for things, they know I'm going to give it 171%. Like it's all in or nothing for me.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what I live by, and that's kind of what we live by. So now that the team is expanding, everybody's kind of expected to be involved in that same set of mindset, you know, and there's room for everybody. There's not room for everybody, I should say. There's room for more people than just me. Yeah.
Right.
So I can't handle the demands of this industry by myself. So there needs to be other people. So the people that are emerging in the business are people who have similar sets of beliefs and similar work ethics. And so they would survive in the market. Other than that, there will be a lot of people, but not many, to be able to actually run a trade that is viable.
Right.
And then I forgot the second part of your question.
Well, pause for that just for a minute. So with that kind of select audience that you look for, would you say your marketing, the type of marketing that you do, is a big part of how you gain those clients?
So for me, I have tried to do like targeted marketing and going out and getting clients and whatnot. But what has happened is that the demand for the services in the industry was kind of higher than what I thought it was. So that minus probably just a couple meetings in the beginning, it's just basically been mostly on word of mouth.
Yeah.
So right now I am almost completely booked just on word of mouth, and I haven't actively gone out and gotten any clients. So, you know, that's something that I'm really grateful for. But of course, I always have my mind on different things. So for example, with what I do with Sonics, that kind of drives itself. Then I kind of started up a subsidiary called Sonic's Weddings. And that one, I did have to get into some more direct marketing to try and secure the clients that I wanted to get. So it was a bit different for Sonic's, for Weddings by Sonic's, you know, but regular Sonic's was kind of functioning on its own in terms of gathering clients and whatnot.
Okay. All right. So where do you see yourself in terms of like your career development? Is this kind of it for the long term? Do you have goals you have in mind, or is it just kind of as it's been going with the flow, as things come up, you take a different turn? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. For me, this is not it at all. Like, you know, we all have aspirations that are much bigger than just here. Mm-hmm. And I still have aspirations that are much bigger than here. It was just exciting for me to explore something that I had no formal training in and actually turned into something viable in terms of being a business. And that just showed me that, you know, like you could literally just do anything, just as long as your mind is focused and you know what you want to do, then the world is your playing field. So I don't hold myself to any standard that is just local. I'll be like, okay, once I'm doing well in Grenada, then it means, okay, I'm good. I actually, you know, somebody was having a discussion and they were like, yeah, you're good. And I was like, no, we're not good. The reason I'm saying we're not good is because I'm seeing what's out there. So my mind is always, what is the standard around the world? And are we meeting that standard? Can we compete anywhere we go? And the question is, probably not. Like a lot of creatives in Grenada, we probably cannot really compete on a serious level. I mean, let me be careful what I'm saying now, because I don't want to mash anybody's cons. Yeah. What I'm saying is that, yes, we can compete. Yes, we have the same mental ability and so on, but there is more to learn. I think that's what I'm trying to say. And sometimes being in this space, people mm-hmm. get complacent because you're booked here, and you know, like for me, like I'm so booked to the point where sometimes like I'm on limited sleep, or I'm like I go to bed at 11 and I'm back in the studio by 3 a.m. You know, I have days like that where I'm so booked that this is what's happening. But at the same time, I'm also cognizant that there is more to go. So I see certain things that I'm even in my own industry. And I'm like, yo, I want to be able to do that. Like, I looked at Cardi B. Cardi B released a video that day for WAP. And I'm like, the intro for WAP alone, I was like, how did they do that? And these are the types of things that I want to do. That integration of like CGI and reality. And now they're merging the two of them. And they're creating these things that they look so real, but like something in the back of your mind tells you like, no, that ain't real, but it looks so good. And how they move, and you know what I mean, so mm-hmm. how to develop things. And I'm like, yo, this is really interesting, and I want to get to the place where, you know, I mean, I don't just want to do what I'm doing now. Like, I want to make bigger things. I want to get involved in bigger things. I want to get back to teaching. I want to give back and make movies. You know what I mean? These are the things that I want to explore and want to do. So to answer your question, absolutely not. This is not where I want to be.
Yeah.
But it was a very useful stage in teaching me some fundamentals about life.
Right.
And how to free your mind to follow the path that I want to follow, and not necessarily the path that somebody else wants me to follow.
Yeah.
So I think ultimately this period of life, that's what it taught me. To free myself and allow myself the liberty to actually pursue something that I would like to pursue. And the gates coming out of this are leading in infinite directions. So this could go anywhere.
Yeah.
But I'm willing to explore. I want to get better and I want to go higher. So, you know what I mean? I don't just want to be Sonic's in Grenada. I want to be Sonic's like
international.
Yeah, need to make sense. So that's the goal. Like, whether or not it will happen, I don't know. Mm-hmm. We never know what life is going to give to us, but we could just prepare our best to position ourselves to take advantage of whatever comes, if it comes. And that's what I'm trying to do now.
You know, as I hear you say that, it's I feel like with some careers, or maybe the way that we're trained to think is that you're trying to achieve something, right? So like if you want to be a project manager, there's certain mm-hmm. steps you have to take to get there, and then that's the destination. But when you're mm-hmm. in a more maybe fluid feel like you find yourself in, mm-hmm. then it's just constantly mm-hmm. learning, like whatever the next thing is, you're learning something new, and then it takes you somewhere else, and then you have to pick up some new skills. Yeah. So it's it's almost better in a way to just see where life takes you rather than set a path for yourself and then you're locked into this box, right?
You said but while you're doing that, you just need to prepare to like be prepared to be where you could be. And I think that's the main point of it. And it's very easy, like, especially if you start up a business, it's very easy to get complacent if the business is financially viable. It's mm-hmm. very easy. But for me, it's never been about that. For me, like, I'm never satisfied with just being regular. So I may be regular now in Grenada, but I don't want to be regular. Yeah. Like, I want to be turned up. Like, I want to be creating things that are turned up. You know what I mean? And I want to feel like, I want to feel a certain way and look back and be like, yes, I did not limit myself to just doing this. We created more. We did more. We tried more. You know, we learned more. We exposed ourselves to more people, more teachings, mm-hmm. more institutions. So it's never a case where like we're flatlined. That should never be the case, in whichever field it is. So, you know, whichever field, doesn't matter, whether it's you're in science, mathematics, it doesn't matter. There's always somewhere higher to go. And I think that's the beauty of life right there. That's the beauty. Exploration for me is the beauty of life. That's where it is.
Yeah.
And once you stop exploring, I feel like you stop seeing beauty. And you just see the now. And for me, the future and the potential is where the beauty is. And that's what I want to see, you know? So, yeah, that's for me. I'm not satisfied. No, I'm not. And I don't want to be here all the time. No, I do not. But I, you know what I mean? I'm just trying to get myself and position myself to be ready for any serious opportunity that will come, you know? Not trying to force the point. Not trying to force it into being, but trying to be ready.
So what's the future and the potential that you see for like this type of creative field in Grenada on a whole right now?
I think right now Grenada is, again, we're just like with technology, I think we're lagging behind in the sense that Where America was, you know, 6 years ago with 4G LTE, that's a relatively new thing. So now America is on 5G and we're still on 4G LTE and we're catching up. But that has been the case with many things. So for example, I would look back in the 90s, let's talk in my business, like a video like Michael Jackson Scream with Janet Jackson. Mm-hmm. And I could almost guarantee you that there is still no production house in Grenada, Carrico, and PT Martinique that can produce something like that. And that was the standard of the world. That was since 1990 something. So when it comes to production, and so we're still probably well over 40 or 50 years behind, in my view.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? In terms of technical capacity, not just run-of-the-mill camera interviews and clean video. You know, we could produce that, but I mean, like, the more technical things, we can't. Like, we just can't. We don't have any, we don't have that specialty here, and we don't have, one, the technology that could drive it, mm-hmm. and we don't have the personnel that knows the technology well enough to drive it or even teach it. Because, you know, to build an industry, you need both of them. You need the people who can do it.
Right.
And you need the people who can do it, and you need some of them to be able to teach it. And that's how an industry can develop. But if you don't have anybody, and then we keep having to go outside to get that experience, mm-hmm. and then when we get outside there, we keep thinking, with what I have now, like, if I could make a Jab Jab, an animated Jab Jab that I could dance all day in a month, then somebody might pay me to do that in the States. But I come back in Grenada and animate a Jab Jab and make it dance and tell them, give me $25,000, and they might ask you if you're crazy.
Yeah.
You know, but you know that it's worth that out there, but you just probably can't pull that here.
Mm-hmm.
So it just needs to be a place where we need to grow. The industry in Grenada needs to grow.
Yeah.
And so I said all that to say that there is potential for growth. But of course, we need some people who could go out there and gather the type of knowledge and so with regard to the skills and the techniques and the technology,
mm-hmm.
and come back here and teach it and start now to sow seeds into what might become a more vibrant industry. And also right next door in Trinidad, you have persons who are involved in animations heavily. I mean, persons who are animating for big companies in the US and so living right in Trinidad.
Yeah.
So there might be one or two in Grenada, but I don't know. Maybe they're private. I don't know. I don't know of any that are here. So whenever like somebody comes to me for serious animation, I have to outsource that. So it's outsourced to some other country.
Yeah.
You know, so that we could get what we need, but it's not easily and readily available in-house at the level that persons are expecting. Because the reality is YouTube and so and all of these things, we have access to the same videos that everybody else has. So when a client is seeing a similar company in a different country producing X, that's what they want.
Right.
So they don't care that we're behind, or they don't care that we don't have those animation skills, that we can't animate like that, or we don't have the computers to drive the process. They just want what they want.
Mm-hmm.
And so where does that leave us? It leaves us to just start outsourcing it because we cannot do it. But what I would like to see in the industry is like we could get to the point where we could be like some guys in Trinidad and actually have animators and so in here, yeah. on island that could work and produce these technical animations and produce characters that have motions that seem realistic. And push it as a viable industry, because the creative arts and even these other areas are extremely lucrative for the persons who are in them. So, you know, it's viable in terms of breaking the status quo as to what a profession is or what type of profession you need to get involved in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you quickly come to find out that a lot of the persons who are financially free are persons who are sometimes not at all working a regular career path. The persons who are doing a lot of freelance jobs and this and, you know what I mean? So it's no longer like the 8-to-5 model anymore. It's like, I'm skilled and you keep paying for my skill. Whether that mean that you are, I have a friend who's a computer programmer, web developer, computer programmer / web developer, and he makes apps and so, and that's all he does, like full time, and he doesn't work for anybody. And I mean, he's living here and he's getting these gigs from overseas, but he's living in Grenada, you know? So I'm trying to say that that's what I would like to see in the industry. Like, you know, we get to the point where the skills that we have are competitive so that persons from outside could just hire and say, Kaim in Grenada, I don't really care, but he good. So like, I want him, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Not like, oh, his work look like 1997, man. Like, we are above that now, you know?
Mm-hmm.
We need to be up to the time. And I think that there is room for growth in the industry. And I think that we could start like pushing it in that direction.
Yeah. Yeah. So this kind of reminds me of an earlier question that we skipped over a little bit, but the struggles that you've had developing your business and so on, would you say a lot of it comes from that kind of limitation?
The struggles, I wouldn't say it's directly related to that. The struggles that we have here in the creative industry is one, there is in terms of running a business like this and being competitive globally,
mm-hmm.
we have one of the fundamental things. One, access to education is one. That I think is a huge factor. Access to, after you're educated, access to like on the job training, that's also absent. So for example, if you want to be some animator. Again, where do you job train in Grenada? There is almost no opportunity. You know, so you kind of need to get your skills outside and then come back here and do it. There's a challenge of financing in terms of getting financing to start your business, because the reality is getting the equipment, and so these things are expensive, they are costly. So, you know, you often need financial assistance from banks, and so you would leverage financing to purchase these products. But sometimes the financing isn't readily available unless you have a rich auntie who just left you like $100,000 to just start buying stuff, you know?
Wish.
And everything that we need is the souped up version of it. So where the regular man might be all happy with a 4 gig memory laptop and, you know, a 2.8 gigahertz processor, we now need 32 gigs, 64 gigs.
Yeah.
We need, you might need 128 gigabytes of storage. We might use up 120 gigabytes of storage in one shoot. So now everything is multiplied. And so the my point is that the things that we need to really do it are costly.
Right.
And so that's a huge, that was a huge hurdle that we have to cross, that we had to cross as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then there is the big one that we call tax. Tax is also a, that's a huge challenge for persons in this business, because as I said, for us to compete, right? If my counterparts in the US are using XYZ cameras, for example, I'll go very basic, and their camera costs 20,000 US and they're shooting for Netflix and producing these things, guess what happens to us? We have to buy the cameras that are worth $10,000, because when it gets here, they're going to charge us 44.9% to clear it.
Yeah.
And so we end up paying an extra how much thousand. So my point is, there is always this huge gap of that much money that could have helped you achieve a better product in terms of what you could use that has to just go into taxes. So your counterpart could buy something for $20,000 in the US and be fine, because all he has to pay is a sales tax, maybe. If he's in Miami, then he pays no sales tax. If he's in New York, he might pay a 7.25%. Or whatever the rate is in New York. In Grenada, we pay 44.9%.
Yeah.
On not only the cost of the item, but the cost of shipping the item.
Right.
And the cost of insuring the item. So we have to pay their sales tax. So if you buy it in New York, for example, we have to pay New York sales tax. So now we are level with them. Then we have to pay to ship it here and insure it while it's being shipped, and then pay 44.9% on that just to get it out.
Yeah.
So we're always, usually, we're always a few steps behind, unless somebody just wants to bite the bullet and be like, I'll buy the equivalent product that my counterparts are buying in the US, and I'll just give the government all of these tax.
Yeah.
So taxes are a major challenge and a major hindrance, in my opinion, to the competitiveness of the persons in this industry on the whole. You know, it's just hard to access the type of technology that we need, because the costs are prohibitive. The cost to import, sometimes prohibitive.
Yeah.
But the environment isn't very conducive for the growth of the industry at on a serious level. You know what I mean? And that's my view. That's my view on it.
Yeah, even that is not something that you think about directly. Like, yeah, you know, you have to pay taxes on things, but just how much it affects you and being able to measure up. It's tough.
To measure up, it's tough. You always have to buy the cheaper version, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
All right. Well, Kaim, what advice do you have to give to the younger people coming up, somebody who might be interested in getting into creative space or just not really sure what to do with themselves and kind of trying to find their way?
Yeah, I mean, definitely I would say explore. That's one of the biggest things, because where I am now was a result of me exploring something that I had no idea about.
Yeah.
And I think that's just a part of life, you know? You have to explore. You have to be willing to try something different and find what makes you tick. You know, don't just settle for what you think you what sounds sexy, like, you know, for me, being an actuary sounds sexy, like, you know, I was like, that's a sexy title. And yes I could do it.
Yeah,
yes, I have the academic background to do it, but it wasn't making me tick. It wasn't giving me any enjoyment. So I think one of the big things that I always try to tell people is to explore until you find what it is that you absolutely love. And you might be involved in creative arts now, and you might find that chemistry is what you love, then go for that. Or it might be the other way around, where you might be in chemistry now and you might find out that you really love things in the creative art field, then go for that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's nothing, in my view, worse than being trapped in something that you don't love. And then you dedicate 30, 40 years of your life working in a position that when you retire, I'm like, why did I do this?
Yeah.
Like, did I actually love this sufficiently enough for me to do what I did? You know? So my advice is always to explore and find yourself before you commit to a career. So there's no rush to commit to a career, especially the persons who might be in their late teens or early 20s. Like, I'm in my early 30s now. So, like, I kind of figured it out towards the end of my 20s. And I was like, okay. And I was 29. When I was 29, I left. So I'm 32 now. So mm-hmm. I'm like, all right, good. So I left the comfort of a job, and then I started this full time. So I kind of found something that I like. And then I could grow this into what I want it to be.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm comfortable now. I don't regret it one day. I'm satisfied with the decision that I made. I never feel like, oh, I wanted to be you should have stuck to actuarial science. I've never one day felt that way. So, you know, that's my advice. And don't let anybody's perception or expectation of you control or dictate who you become. For me, that was a major pressure. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I tell you, like, my family and my aunts and everybody wanted me down a certain line. So yeah. I remember when I was finishing up college, secondary school, and I wanted to go to college, and I wrote down on my paper to go to Santa Luis Community College, economics, business, accounting. And then my mom and them talked me out of that. And she was like, you can pick up the business thing anytime, you know. But the science part, like, you know, if you lose that, you lose it, and you probably won't get that back. So she was like, do the science and forget the business. You can always pick up the business. You know, I guess she was right to a certain extent, because I picked up the business. But at the same time, because I also have picked up the science, if you know what I mean, if you're already dedicated really to it.
Yeah.
But my conviction is that persons need to find what they enjoy and stick to it. And that has nothing to do with what anybody else thinks you should do. So your decision to become a doctor should not be because your mom is a doctor and your mom feels like, well, you should be a doctor and you should carry on the family lineage in this field.
Mm-hmm.
Or you shouldn't become a businessman because your daddy owns a store in town and you just want to continue in the line.
Yeah.
You are very much different from everybody else in your circle. And so you have to find out what makes you tick. And you need to align yourself with that. And that's my only advice. And I think if people do that, then more people would be a bit happier and a little bit more content.
Mm-hmm.
And not trying to, like, just do things that sound good or sound big, but do things that actually matter to them. You know? So that's what I would say. That's my advice.
Easier said than done, eh? There's
I know, absolutely.
Pressure's out there. And it's it's very easy to get comfortable in a job that's paying you.
I know.
Right?
I know. Absolutely. I've been there, so I know.
Yeah. I agree 100% though. So that's a good
one.
All right. Well, as we wrap up, if there's anybody out there who wants to reach out and kind of learn more, maybe has some more questions they want to ask you or just understand how you've gotten to where you are, is there a good way for them to reach out and contact you?
Yeah. My Instagram mm-hmm. is The Sonics Way. So if you Google, if you Instagram the Sonics way, you'll find me there.
Okay.
I'm easily accessed on WhatsApp as well. So my contact is 534-9571. Facebook. So I'm on Facebook as Kai and Joseph, Sonics Productions. So any one of those that you message, the message will get to me.
All right.
So any one of those works. If you want to reach out, if you're into emails, my email address is kaim.joseph@gmail.com. Yeah. So if you prefer emails, then that works too.
And that's K-A-I-E-M.
K-A-I-E-M. Yeah. K-A-I-E-M.joseph.
At Gmail?
At Gmail. That's correct. Correct though.
Cool. Well, it has been a good conversation. So thanks for making the time. I know you have a lot going on. You're probably back to work right after this.
Back to work right after this.
So yeah. Thanks again for taking the time and really appreciate it.
No problem. Thank you very much.
And to the listeners, thank you for joining us on today's Pathway. Are you interested in audio editing and mixing? Have a passion for media and for education? Reach out to become part of our Pathways production team. We are looking for individuals with great communication skills, an ear for detail, and some creative flair. Open positions include podcast outreach manager and audio and content editor. If you'd like to learn more, send an email to admin@grensteam.org. We'd love to have you on board.